Welcome to Tech and Law Insights, hosted by Lurie.ai. This is our second sub-podcast episode, Legal Tech Leaders, and we explore the frontiers of legal technology and innovation. I'm your host, Rupa, co-founder at Lurie.ai. Today, we're honored to have with us Professor Sanford Williams, who is a distinguished figure bringing us a unique perspective from his roles as Deputy Managing Director at the Federal Communications Commission and Lecturer of Law at UCLA Law School. Professor Williams has a JD degree as well as an MBA and over 25 years of experience in telecommunications policy and regulation. He has a deep commitment to education, and Professor Williams offers invaluable insights into how technology, policy, and legal education are evolving in our increasingly connected world. Thank you for joining us as our guest speaker for episode 5, Professor Williams, and our second episode of the sub-podcast.
Thank you, Rupa, for having me. I'm proud of you all for doing this podcast and look forward to talking with you.
Thank you so much. I have a lot of questions for you. So let me start with technology, policy, and legal innovation. Having spent over 2 decades at the FCC, how have you seen the relationship between technology and legal frameworks evolving?
That's a great question. I think that in general, it hasn't changed, meaning that technology has always driven the legal framework. So if you look at, you know, congressional laws, the FCC was established in 1934 by an act that kind of focused on radio, and then television came along and it focused on television. And then you have the internet come along, and the internet is part of the portfolio the FCC looks at. So I think that technology has always kind of led and helped frame what we do legally. Mm-hmm. So I think that that interplay has not changed. I think what has changed is the quickness and rapidity with which technology is changing. So the faster the technology changes, the more you have to devise legal mechanisms to deal with it. And technology definitely moves faster than the law.
That is so interesting. What lessons, you know, looking into the future, what lessons from telecommunications regulation could inform how we approach emerging legal technologies?
I think that one thing that's really important is to have more interplay between the private sector and the public sector, because there are things that are going on, things with AI, for example, that just kick off that the public sector, the government, the legal framework is not really, you know, positive to deal with. So I think having more interaction and interplay between the private sector and the public sector would be helpful. Looking at it from a, you know, public sector perspective, I think that we need to be more engaged in having folks who know more about emerging technologies. And I think it's easy to fall into the trap of, you know, I think, you know, I'm an expert, I know what I know, but I think we need to have more people in government who are involved with emerging technologies. And on the flip side, for the private side, I think it's important for folks who are into technology and who are entrepreneurs and work in these areas to understand what the law is, and then try to work with folks to discern what the law is in their area and how the law may affect them as they move forward with their endeavors.
Sure. And today I found out from a prominent legal recruiter based in Southern California that actually a good percentage of lawyers have not even used ChatGPT or use prompting to kind of help with their workflows. As a lecturer at UCLA Law School, how do you prepare future lawyers for a tech-driven legal landscape? And in your perspective, what role should legal technology play in modern legal education?
That is an awesome question. So I've been teaching for about 4 years now. When I started teaching 3 years ago, I did not think about ChatGPT. That was not on my radar. Yeah. I had no concerns. Now in my class, I've devoted this semester a number of classes to talking about AI and ChatGPT, because it's a practical matter. The lawyers who are graduating and go out into the legal world and the landscape will be using these tools. So I think because they will be using these tools, and it's incumbent upon us, and when I say us now, I'm talking from my perspective as a professor, yeah, us to teach and talk to students about what that looks like and what that should encompass. And you mentioned at the top, you talked to someone who mentioned that a lot of lawyers who are currently practicing don't know anything about ChatGPT or by, you know, extension AI. And that's correct, because a lot of folks are out there practicing, doing what they usually do. But like I mentioned in my earlier answer, I think it's important for folks who are practitioners to understand emerging technologies, and they're going to be left behind if they don't find, you know, figure out and find out what's going on in our industry and the things that can not only help, but are really going to be essential if you're going to be the most efficient and effective practitioner.
That makes a lot of sense. And there are concerns with lawyers and attorneys, as I understand it, on the ethical use of AI. Do you have any advice for us for how, you know, we can ensure that legal tech innovations don't perpetuate bias in the legal system or are used responsibly?
That is a great question. I think that it's, even though it's a new technology, I think that when you look at things from a moral or ethical perspective, I mean, those things don't change. So mm-hmm. what I think the first step is to understand what it is you're using, whether it's ChatGPT or using, let's say, generative AI platform, which may be iterative, so it may have biases in it. So understanding what you're using is the first step in the process. And after understanding that, trying to use the ethical and moral code and that you have and the legal rules that, you know, kind of govern our ethics, and try to use those rules as you operate through the realm of using AI. I do think that one thing that is important to talk about my class as well is that because a lot of AI is generative, that especially that lawyers use, if there are biases in it, they will be just reinforced. So you need to be aware of that when you look at these tools. And that's also where it comes in, where you have to be knowledgeable about, you know, emerging technology. So folks, you know, who are lawyers, not only need to know the ethical canons that they need to abide by, but also need to understand as best they can the platforms and the instruments they're using, so they can kind of combine those two and be the best, most effective and efficient lawyers they can be.
Sure. And reviewing output is very important, and double checking that, of course. I want to go back to what you were talking about, innovation and collaboration between the public and private sector. Drawing from your experience in both public service and education, what opportunities can you speak to those? Do you see for public and private collaboration in legal tech?
Definitely. One thing I loved in my job at the FCC is that over the years, because the FCC licenses, you know, anything to do with communications, whether you have a new iPhone or a new computer or a new headphone, those all come through the FCC. So the folks in private industry who devise these things had to come to us, the public, you know, institution, the FCC, to talk about what they're doing and make sure that what they were doing was something that didn't run afoul of our rules. I think those kind of collaborations, it was a necessity for, you know, for these folks who are with new devices because we had to license them. But I think those kind of collaborations are really important if we're going to have a situation or a template where entrepreneurs are able to be, you know, nimble and produce the best equipment that they can produce, and lawyers in the public sector and government agencies are able to kind of look at and evaluate things from that perspective. So I think that collaboration is essential if we're going to have a well-oiled machine which benefits both the public sector and the private sector.
Is there a way that legal tech companies can better engage with regulatory bodies to ensure innovation aligns with the interests of both the public sector and the private sector?
That's an awesome question. And I think that, Rupa, one thing that folks don't do is they don't approach, let's say, the government. So, for example, at the FCC, I'll use that where I worked at, many times folks will come to us, entrepreneurs, and say, oh, I have this device or I have this idea, you know, how does it impact, how does it, you know, flow with the current rules in this area? And we were always happy or always happy to take those meetings because it benefits not only the person who's coming to us, but it benefits society and it benefits, you know, the government and it benefits the law because you're able to kind of have an interplay, you know, with things, you know, on the front end. Now, of course, we can't go in and give people advice and tell them to do X, Y, Z, but by having that type of interaction, both sides, public and private sector, can be better informed about what the landscape looks like. And by having that type of conversation, it can definitely help going forward. I think that a lot of times, folks on the private sector, especially folks who are entrepreneurs or who are developing things, they don't have the connections, don't understand, or don't know who to contact, or don't even know it's important to talk to folks on the public in the public sector, in the public sphere, folks, we don't go out and play, let's see, let's go to Silicon Valley or let's go to Idaho and find out what's going on in this area. So we have the resources to do that. But I do think that to answer your question specifically, folks who are operating in the private sphere, especially folks who have entrepreneurial ideas and they're trying to have innovations that they want to bring to bear, bring to the market, it never hurts to get an attorney if you don't want to, or someone who's familiar with an agency, contact the agency and say, I'd like to speak with your folks here who are knowledgeable about this issue, just so I can get a feel about where things stand. And I think those things can always benefit both the public sector and the private sector.
That is so insightful, Professor Williams. I want to turn to the future of legal practice using some of these tools that are being developed. Can you speak a little bit to what kind of skills today's law students should develop to succeed? What skills are you teaching in your class? And how can these law students succeed given all of these emerging technologies?
That's another great question. You're pretty good at this. So I would say a couple of things. But first, and this is my personal perspective, the way I approach students, the way I approach mentees, the way I approach raising my three adult children. I think that you need to be a compassionate person with integrity. I think that, those things, being compassionate and having integrity, are something that should be overarching in everything you do. And I think that having those things helps frame how you look at life. So I definitely advocate those things. Now, other than that, obviously, in terms of law students specifically, I'd say you need to understand the law as best you can. The law will change, but understand wherever you are in your journey, what the law is at the current time, and be open to knowing that you don't know everything and that things will change, and be a lifelong learner because things will always change. In addition to that, I think you have to be humble enough to understand that even if you're an expert in the law, there are new technologies, and like we talked about ChatGPT or AI, that are so new and nuanced and nascent that no one knows everything about it. So if you're going to work in those areas, you should learn as much as you can about those new areas and inform yourself. And things you don't know, reach out to the experts, like you talked to someone earlier today, you mentioned, who do know things, and network with folks, whether you're classmates, your professors, or people you meet, so you can learn as much as you can. So I'd say for law students, they need to understand the law, obviously, as best they can. They need to abide by the ethical canons and keep their integrity and humility and compassion as they operate and navigate the space, and then work with folks in areas that they may be working in, especially entrepreneurs or folks in technical spaces they don't know as much about, to educate themselves on those areas as best they can.
Professor Williams, I actually know a couple students in your class, and they absolutely love your class. And I think it's this kind of holistic approach of studying legal education that it makes me definitely wish I were in your class. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a little bit of your predictive insights into how you envision technology reshaping legal practice for the students in your class and law students who are entering the workforce over the next decade?
So another great question. I think that one thing that's happening already and will continue to happen is something, again, I use ChatGPT because that's what's best known, but things like ChatGPT or things that Lurie AI is doing with legal education, there are things that they do, these instruments or that these mechanisms can do, mm-hmm. that make what lawyers do so much easier because they're so quick. They got so fast, and they can get results much more quickly than we can do on our own. So I think having these tools can only make your practice more efficient and more effective, with the caveat that there already have been many cases where there have been hallucinations or things that weren't correct. So with the strong caveat that you can use these tools because they will make your life easier and can make things quicker and more effective, but you need to check to make sure that when you look at the results are valid. So you can't just say, okay, well, I got the list of cases in ChatGPT, I'm good, I'm following this brief. So learn how to use this stuff because it will make your life easier. It'll make things function much more quickly, which is good for you and your client. But also understand that you need to check. And then for law students, especially younger law students and also younger attorneys, I think that you can't totally rely on using these mechanisms as a way to learn the law, because part of law school and part of being a lawyer is learning how to, you know, communicate, whether it's written communication, verbal communication, analyzing issues, and understanding how to go through a case. And if you kind of farm that all out at the beginning on the front end to a ChatGPT, then you aren't getting the skills that you need to be the best and most effective lawyer and counsel that you can.
Yeah. And it's important for firms and legal tech companies to kind of manage this at a higher level from a program management perspective, with these new technologies being implemented in the workplace. Your experience includes significant program management and implementation at the FCCs. What strategies can legal tech companies or law firms adopt to successfully implement new technologies in traditional legal settings?
I think there are a lot of things that folks can do. I think one thing that you alluded to, again, back to your talk to someone earlier about the fact that many lawyers don't understand or use ChatGPT.
Yeah.
The lawyers who make decisions are often those lawyers. So you have to be wise enough, even as a seasoned lawyer, to understand what you don't know, or as I like for my kids, know what you don't know. So it's important to have a diversity of voices from people in different stages of their careers, different stages of their lives, different backgrounds, so you can get and reach the best conclusion. I think oftentimes what we do is we put folks in leadership positions and we assume, okay, you're all knowing and you can know everything. And they maybe could be good at one thing, let's say understanding antitrust law, but they don't know anything about ChatGPT. If you're going to be a leader in the space, in the sphere, as you move along legal education, and then as a lawyer in a law firm or any other endeavor, you need to have folks around you who can bring different perspectives that you may not understand. And I can tell you for sure, a lot of my 2L, 3L, even 1L law students, and that's first year, second year, third year law students for those listening, know much more about ChatGPT and how to use AI for legal research than many partners do. So if that partner's at a law firm, if they want to give the best service to their clients, they need to work with these, you know, newer attorneys or folks before they even attorneys, law students, to understand what they don't know. And that diversity that is required to reach the best result is true not only for, you know, again, age, but it's true for backgrounds, because a lot of times, you know, for generative AI, there are biases that play into it, because many times the folks who do it are just kind of repeating and regurgitating what the person before has said. And you have a diversity of voices to make sure that all voices are heard. It's easy to have a product which is not necessarily as robust as it should be.
That is so important for not only building the AI tools themselves, but its successful implementation. And I have one final question for you today, Professor Williams. How can organizations better bridge the gap between overarching policy objectives and the technological implementation itself?
Well, that's a tough one, Rupa. I think that the best way to do that is kind of what I mentioned and touched on earlier, is public-private partnership, overarchingly, but just talking, networking with folks. So whether it's going to bar association events, meeting with your, you know, congressperson, going to the federal agencies, talking with folks who deal with areas and technology and the law, having conversations with folks is the best way to get to it, because we operate in silos in many ways in our society, public sector, private sector, people with their own folks in whatever sphere they operate in. And I think that's gotten even worse now after the pandemic, and when folks can just stay in their own lane, so to speak. But if we want to have the best, most robust public-private partnership, and we also want to have great entrepreneurship without, you know, being, you know, stymied by the law too much, that networking and talking collaboration is important. And I like to give out quotes to my class, and I also give them out to my colleagues. I've been doing it for a couple of years now. And the quote that I used yesterday was, and I loved it, was that, my goal, I feel like my job for my students and my friends and family, my colleagues, is to hold them steady, but not hold them still. Mm-hmm. Meaning that I want to keep them on track, not let them go crazy, not let them go overboard, and be there to kind of keep them anchored, but don't hold them still. That's definitely innovation. So I think if you take that quote and you kind of apply it to the question you asked, as a government and as a society, we want to make sure folks who are innovating, we keep them steady, they follow the law, and they stay within the guardrails of what the law says, but don't hold them still. Let them roam, let their imaginations run free, and let them innovate and do things that can help them in society.
Thank you, Professor Williams, for your inspiring and very informative responses. Your perspective spanning telecommunications policy, legal education, and initiatives provides a very comprehensive view for lawyers, law students, and technologists who are building ethical and responsible AI for lawyers. Where is this technology heading, and how we can ensure it serves all stakeholders effectively?
Well, thank you very much for having me, Rupa. I've enjoyed getting to know you, and I'm proud of you for doing the podcast, and you're doing great work. So thank you for thinking of me to be included on this great podcast.
Thank you. I'm learning so much. I would certainly like to have you back for a future episode. To our listeners, thank you for joining us for another episode of Tech and Law Insights hosted by Lurie.ai. This is our second podcast, Legal Tech Leaders. This is a reminder to subscribe to stay updated on future episodes where we'll continue to explore the evolving landscape of legal technology. I'm Rupa, and this has been brought to you by Lurie.ai.